can just be patient so that and follow the presentation that was forwarded to them.
Yeah, no, I think all of us are getting better on this technology, because I'm sure with the members as well, I can see all of you 5-2 times you're logging in, but previously you had to use an hour or 30 minutes to do that. So there is improvement, I can't complain about that. So I'm sure with the secretariat and the advocate, you'll find the best way of being able to project the information you want to share. Okay, advocate, when you're ready, we can proceed.
Thank you, Chair. I will then proceed on slide 4. So what we have here is just the possible actions in respect of the retrospective application. So the advice that we give the committee on these retrospective clauses is the same as we've given to the Fifth Parliament, namely that we do recommend that these clauses be amended so that they only provide for prospective operation. And then if the committee agrees with us, the Copyright Amendment Bill will then be amended by deleting subsections 7 in clauses 5 and 7, and also deleting subsection 5 in clause 9, renumbering the subsections and deleting clause 38.2, which provided for that compromise where there would have been a staggered implementation. If the committee disagrees with our legal view, or it feels the same as the Fifth Parliament's committee, namely that this is something that must be in the bill, if it must be declared unconstitutional, let that be done by the Constitutional Court, but it is important to address this injustice, then of course the committee can report to the House that it does not agree with the President's reservation. And then the next reservation is on slide 5, dealing with delegations. Now, this ties in with the previous reservation because these delegations were part of that compromise that the committee devised in order to get around the constitutionality concern. So this is where the minister will have to go and do certain functions, do impact assessment study, report back to the National Assembly, and then we'll have to develop process for these retrospective provisions to be made applicable. So the clause itself is constitutional. There's no problem with the delegations given to the minister. The problem is that they form part of a larger clause that might be found unconstitutional. And I think the minister actually said last week, and I thought that was so profound because it's correct, but I didn't put it in my presentation. I'm going to steal from his words, but I'll give him credit, seeing as we're working with copyright. I've now acknowledged the moral rights of our minister, that a regulation cannot correct an unconstitutional provision. So it is a concern. And then our recommendation would be, like I say, first off, if the committee agrees with our recommendation regarding retrospectivity, then these will fall away anyway. They are sort of tied together. If the committee decides, I'm sorry, I'm now going to slide 6 with the possible actions. If the committee has agreed with us, so the possible action 1 would be that the delegations will also be deleted. The second possible action is that the House, the committee will say, no, we do not, we agree with your advice, and we think that these delegations can stay there.
Okay, the advocate.
Okay, I think I was kicked out for a moment. I hope I'm still there. Those are the recommendations on these issues. So, Chief, I can take a break for now because then the next slide would go over onto the next subject matter, the matter of exceptions.
Advocate, I thought maybe what we can do, allow you to actually work through all the issues, and then come back
and pick up the first one and actually have deliberation.
Chair,
Mr. Zibbons has a hand, Chair.
Hammonds.
Chair, actually,
Chair, at the start of the presentation, the advocate did explain, and we understood her reasons for breaking it up into two units. Because if you take the presentation as a whole, it's two separate issues. So I think we agreed at the start of her presentation, because we didn't say no, that we would consider this part. And while I have the floor, I want to say that as the African National Congress in this portfolio committee, we thank her for doing the presentation, but that the African National Congress component of the PC is requesting time to do further deliberations, and then we consider and take a decision on the recommendations at a future time. Thank you.
Chair, Mr. McPherson wants to raise, Chair, and he requests that we flight the options also, if that's possible, Chair.
Okay. May I speak, Chair?
Yeah.
Thanks. All right. I just want to, if I may, just understand fully what the Honourable Hermans is requesting. In principle, I have no objection to it, but I just want to understand, does she want the ANC colleagues to be able to work through this particular section first, whichever forum they choose to do so, because if that is the case, I think it would be difficult for advocate to proceed with the presentation, because it has consequential ramifications. So I just want to just try and understand exactly what the Honourable Hermans is requesting, but in principle I have no objection to it.
Thank you. If I may, Chair.
Okay, because we are discussing process now, because on my part I thought we were actually also have a look at what's being suggested, what options we have, and then be able to actually get to a point where we may want to look at those options and agree as a committee after having had time maybe to discuss among ourselves if we need that time to be able to process that issue. Hermans?
Yes, Chair. I don't see how it affects the rest of the presentation, the other two substantive reservations. But we are requesting, as the African National Congress, to be given more time to deliberate on these reservations in our study group.
Okay, so it's a point where maybe one was thinking, Honorable Hermans, that is the request for a break to do that linked to our discussions today, or maybe a point of being able to actually defer the issue and be able to come back on the next session that we should have. I'm just looking. It's a practical point. I think Van McPherson is trying to clarify that as well, to say, do we break now, had a session, or we actually note that and then be able to actually have our next session as a feedback session on the same point?
Correct, Jay, your second option.
Okay. McPherson, I'm sure that's the point. And maybe for now, do we, Hermans, we are comfortable with the understanding presented by the advocate, and we don't think there's any further clarity that she may have to take us through. So maybe the advocate can just give us the executive summary of what the suggestion is.
Chair.
If there are options, then we can pick up on that. McPherson, and then can we go back to the other
page? I better understand what the Honourable Hermans is saying now. May I then suggest that we continue with it, but that when we then come to deliberations, that those slides will be able to be reflighted again by the advocate, just so we can see visually what is being suggested. So when we deliberate again, the advocate will come back, and we don't have to go. We don't have to rehash the presentation, but we will just go through the options.
In agreement, Chair.
Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy to accept that. My presentation is, of course, always available. And in fact, I can continue with the other two reservations without a decision having been taken on the first. May I proceed with that?
Yes, all in order.
Thanks. So I'm then on slide 7. Now, we are now dealing with the copyright exceptions. And the concern of the president in respect of the copyright exceptions was threefold. The first, that some of them may constitute arbitrary deprivation. Secondly, that some of them may infringe on a person's right to choose a trade, occupation, or profession. And thirdly, that they are in conflict with the three-step test. And specifically, this relates to fair use. Now, in respect of arbitrary deprivation, well, first off, deprivation is possible. The Constitution allows for deprivation. What it may not be is arbitrary. Now, arbitrary here, we look at a number of factors. So if you consider things like how much impact is there in respect of the two rights that are the one being protected and the one being infringed, what is the rationale behind of this? What is the process involved? There's a number of issues. And I've actually later on in the presentation, I've got the actual wording. And then we can quickly have a look at that and just see what it is that might cause the discomfort and whether that can be seen as something that is unfair and cannot be justified in an open and democratic society, which is what our Constitution's Limitation Clause provides. So as I'm saying on this slide, first off, we need to remember that copyright has always been subject to exceptions. And I will show when I go through the actual wording how much of it is new and how much of it is actually already in the current Act. Because not all of it's a reinvention of the Act. Some of it was just taken from the Act and expanded on. And copyright in itself limits the rights to education, dignity, quality trade, freedom of expression. So we're already dealing with a balancing act here when we're dealing with copyright. The purpose of the exceptions in these bills is to modernize the system, to make it more user-friendly. Things that are already happening in practice and seems very reasonable, and no copyright owner has a problem with it. For instance, if I buy a compact disc with music on it and I pop it into my laptop, save it on my hard drive so that I can listen to the music while I'm working, no one has a problem with that because it's my CD. I'm just listening to it in another format. But that is not allowed by the Act. I've actually just admitted to a crime right now or to a contravention of an Act. But that is something that is so accepted. And this is what the bill provides for. It makes things that have become modern practice just so that it is provided for in the Act. So the exceptions are further subject to a four-factor test. It is not just an open-for-all situation. If I can then go to the second concern, slide 8. On slide 8, I'm talking to the issue of the trade and occupation and profession right. Now, just summarize it as POP, because there's a lot to list, and I've got a lot of words on this slide. When we talk about a choice of trade, occupation, and profession, there's two tests. The first one, does the bill, in fact, create a legal barrier to entry? And the answer is, of course, no. There's nothing in this bill that says you may not, or certain people may not, choose this trade, occupation, or profession. So what we are talking here is whether this bill places an effective limit or an effective bar to that choice. And a shift of profits is very unlikely to be seen as an effective limit, especially as that shift in profits, which is what the bills are trying to achieve, is in fact trying to address an imbalance which is already there in the copyright law. So if we look at the second set, leg of Section 22 regarding the regulation of trade, occupation, or profession, the test there would be one of rationality and not whether it is the best means or so on. Although I don't think that is what is relevant here, I think the issue is that the balancing act that is brought about by these bills are seen by people who are currently making a profit and who might have to now share that profit with the authors. That is where it feels that I'm not going to make enough profit and therefore I can't do this business. So that is what we need to look at. That is what we need to consider. On the next slide, I'm talking about this three-step test, slide 9. And now, first off, and I'll explain this better when we get to the treaties. In fact, compliance with international treaties is not a ground for a Section 79(1) referral. So the I'll discuss it under treaties. I don't want to say too much under that. But even if we look at the three-step test, the concern is, and it's been a question that has been around, I think the Australian Law Reform Commission that I'm referring to answered this question in 2013 about whether fair use is in fact in compliance with the three-step test. And a number of, if we look at international conventions, their interpretation and so on, it is quite clear that if we look at practices, and if we then apply that in respect of the Vienna Convention, which gives us how we should interpret conventions and treaties, it is quite clear that the three-step test does include fair use. So there's really no concern on that. Then if I can go to slide 10, I'm not sure if Margot is moving the slides or if I'm not seeing them.
Margot's not moving the slides, Margot.
If we can go to slide 10, I know sometimes there's a bit of a delay on these slides. So slide 10, this is the first clause that is in fact effective. 12A. Now 12A is our fair use clause. So what we have here is, in fact, there's a lot in this clause that reads exactly the same as it did in the Act. The change that have come in is in respect of the word fair use in that introductory sentence, in addition to uses specifically authorized, fair use in respect of the work or performance of that work for purposes such as the following does not infringe. So it has changed the concept of fair dealing to fair use. But if we look at paragraphs 1, for instance, research, private study, personal use, that's already in the Act. Criticism or review, that's already in the Act. Reporting current events, that's already in the Act. What is new is scholarship, teaching, and education. We already have parody, satire. What is new is collection of libraries. And we've already got public administration. So these are not all new things. The main things that seem to be new is the scholarship, teaching, education, and the libraries, archives, and museums. Now, these two matters speak to rights in respect of access to information, education, dignity, and those things. So that is the balancing act that we must look at when we consider whether these would be arbitrary deprivation or would affect someone's choice to make choose a trade, occupation, or profession. Now, paragraph B, this is the paragraph that sets out all those factors that must be taken into account when a court or a party will decide, well, a court will decide, but a party will...
Okay.
Okay, sorry, I was just kicked out for a moment. I do apologize for that. Okay. On paragraph B, so when we look at whether something is fair use, we will have to look at all the circumstances, but not just all the circumstances. We specifically say part of the circumstances that must be taken into account. So other things will also be taken into account, not just these four things. The facts of the situation will be looked at. But you need to look at the nature of the work in question. You need to look at how much and how substantial a part of that work was in fact affected. When you use the word, was it something that was totally different from the way that the work was being used before? Is it for commercial purposes? Is it for non-profit purposes? What is the substitution effect on the potential market? In other words, the rights of the copyright owner is as protected here as would be these rights in relation to education, dignity, and so on. If we go to the next slide, that would be slide 11. That deals with section 12B. Now, on section 12B, I'm not sure I fully understand why some of these provisions were referred back to the committee, because, for instance, paragraph A, any quotation, is already in the Act. The only difference is that the bill now makes this applicable not just to literary work, it makes it applicable to all works. So that is really the only difference. It's no longer limited to literary or musical work, but it's applicable to all copyright work. I'm not sure how that shift could be seen as arbitrary or affecting a choice of profession. The reproduction by a broadcaster, the same year, this is already in the Act. The only difference is, again, that it's applicable to all works, not just to musical and literary works. And then it also provides for modern technology, such as wire or wireless means, in order to transmit something to the public. In respect of E, that is also already in the Copyright Act. The only difference, again, is that it is now applicable to all works and transmission or other communication to the public. So I'm not sure about why these would be there. If is a new one, that is translation. In other words, if you are teaching or you are receiving teaching, someone is giving you lessons or so on, then you may translate the work. Now I'm quite sure that anyone who has studied in a language that's not their mother tongue has already translated text into a language that they understand when they study. And that is what this is allowing. It is allowing an existing practice that is acceptable. So these are the other things here. I just also want to maybe point out at this stage that in respect of Section 12A, because the committee has agreed to publish, to call for comments on issues of fair use, Section 12A will already be open up. So I think that one, actually, the argument is moot. 12A will already be opened up for reconsideration by this committee. In 12B, on the slide before the committee now, I'm sorry, I don't have a list of this on my presentation, but what I'll do is I will send a list through to Andre, just so that members have a better idea, better picture of which of these are already in the Act and which of these will already be published. So, because it makes the argument a bit moot if we know we're going to publish it in any event, because it is then already opened by implication. So on 12B, the one that will definitely be opened up in respect of the publication and the call for comments on fair use would be this paragraph F, the issue of translation. Then if I can go to the next slide, slide 12, this is 12D, the reproduction for educational and academic activities.
My apologies, Chair. I think that the slide, it's a thing here.
Okay.
I think that the slides are not, I'm following on my, one of my other devices, and I've got 12, we're going to 12D now. The advocate was talking about section 12A, C, D, A, C, E, F, which is slide 11, but Margot's slide 11 has got something completely different. And now she's going on to slide 12, which 12D. And at the top of slide 12, it's 12D, reproduction for educational and academic activities, and that is not what Margot has. So I think that they're looking at two different presentations. What the presentation that Margot has may be an older one. I'm not sure, Chair.
Okay. No, I think let's actually get Margot and the advocate to have a look, because I'm sure when we talk about slide number, at least if ever we consistent, that it should be the same. Margot, can you just double check for the advocate in terms of the slides we're putting up? Because I see slide 12 before us now, international treaty implications one. So that it is we.
Yeah.
Sorry, Chair, I think I did have an older version. I've now just double checked and okay. I think I've got the latest one now.
Okay. Okay, advocate keeps cutting as well, but we'll actually just make sure that she comes back. Advocate, floor is yours. We just, the 12th one before us, copyright exceptions.
Thank you, Chair. That is the correct slide. I'm sorry, I was following on my own presentation and not looking at the screen. I do apologize. I should have noticed that earlier. So, yes, on section 12D, this whole section will in any event be opened up when we publish because it is new. It is not something that is in the Act currently, and it is definitely a fair use situation. So I'm not going to spend too much time on this because it is being opened up anyway. If we go to slide 13, this is just 12D continued, dealing with the acceptance for libraries and so on, education. Then the next slide, slide 14, I think Margot will get there soon. This deals with libraries, archives, museums, and galleries. And the same goes for this section. Because of the call for comments on fair use clauses, this clause will be opened up as well.
Can we allow Margot to catch up?
We're on slide 12, 14 now, projected.
Yes, we are on slide 14, Chair.
Okay. Thanks, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair. So this one, I'm also not going to spend too much time because, like I say, it will in any event be opened up with the fair use. Then on slide 15, I referred to the possible actions. So like I've said, and I hope that was audible, I will send a list of these clauses to Mr. Hermans and just indicate which are already in the Act, what are the differences, and which will be published anyway. So it'll be perhaps only the committee only has to focus on those which are not yet considered or not yet affected, rather, by the procedural decision that the committee did. Now, in our view, all of these exceptions is likely to pass constitutional muster. They are not arbitrary. They're not open-ended. They balance the rights affected. They are aimed at achieving a legitimate government purpose. And there's a rational connection between them and the purpose. They do not limit the rights to choose your trade, occupation, or profession. And even if it is argued that that they do, they would pass the test of Section 36, for the same reason as that they are not arbitrary. And they comply with the three-step test. So the possible actions here is, firstly, if the committee agrees with our view, it can say to the House, it can report to the House that it does not agree with the President's reservations. And of course, this would be in respect of only those specific clauses that are not already affected by the fair use publication decision. If the committee disagrees with our view, it may then consider these specific sections, see where it feels uncomfortable with the constitutionality aspects of these clauses, and may then amend those so that they in fact forward. So then the next slide, 16, this is the international treaty implications. I grouped this one together with the exceptions because it affects the exceptions. So when I said that international treaty implications by themselves are not a ground for referral on Section 79, this slide 16 sets out the reason why. When we look at the case of Glenister versus the President of the Republic, the court indicates that international agreements only creates domestic statutory obligation. Whether they are incorporated and domesticated, that does not transform the rights and obligations in those treaties to constitutional rights and obligations. So in other words, a treaty in itself cannot constitute a constitutional obligation and therefore cannot constitute a constitutional concern. But treaties are not something that can just be rejected and put aside. Although the treaties involved here are in fact not yet domesticated, not yet incorporated into our law, so this committee cannot consider possible law, that cannot be expected. But we all know that the purpose of these bills are a form of domestication of these treaties. So it is important to consider them. But where they must be considered is not as a ground in themselves. They should be considered when we look at the actual content of the bill. So for instance, the exceptions, when we consider the exceptions, we can also consider how those exceptions are giving effect to these treaties. On page, on slide 17, the minister made a comment last week that we cannot just say to the president, this is not a ground for referral. We will have to take it on review. And I've discussed it within my office. We've done a little bit more research on this. And our whole office agrees that Section 79 referrals are not the same as a finding by a Chapter 9 institution, because I think that the minister was equating your referral to a report, for instance, of the public protector or the auditor general, but it is not the same. Section 79 is a line of communication between the president and parliament. Parliament has done some work on a bill, it then forwards that to the president to assent. So it's a communication, it tells the president, we've done our work, we are happy with this piece of legislation, we require you to now, as head of state, sign this into law. Now, then the Constitution allows for this communication process where the president can say, I have constitutional concerns, Parliament. I'm not sure that I can assent to this bill. And therefore, I'm sending it back to you. I'm giving you my reasons. And you must now consider what I'm saying to you, and then respond to me. So Section 79 then specifically provides for a court process. So if the National Assembly would now approach a court and say, oh, we want this referral ground set aside, the court would say, no, you are premature. You cannot approach the court right now. You need to respond to the president, and the president can then bring that matter to court to say that he disagrees with Parliament. So it's not a matter of review. It is something that can, in fact, be considered now. If I can go to the next slide, what we're looking at with these international treaty implications, I'm not saying that these treaties are not important. That is absolutely not what our advice is. The problem that we're facing is that Section 79 legislative processes are very limited. We can only consider what was referred by the president, and the president can only refer what he is allowed to refer in terms of the Constitution. So it's very, very important that we do not confuse Section 79 referrals with a process of reconsidering policy. It can only be constitutional matters that can be considered. Because of that limitation, we have to advise this committee that this is not a constitutional ground and it cannot be considered. However, when this committee considers the other constitutional concerns raised by the president, my implication, and according to the finding in the Glenister case, the committee will consider the treaty implications. It is something that automatically flows. It is not something that will have to be considered as a separate ground. So if I can refer the committee, for instance, to yesterday's, to the DGI's.
Okay. So we'll just go
back. My screen says I'm out. I'm back in again. I do apologize for that. Normally my connection is quite stable. I'm not sure what's going on today. The treaty language also uses shall or may provide adequate legal protection, and the provisions were drafted in line with these treaty articles. So they strike a balance, they provide legal protection, and they address national needs. And then they also provided us with some examples, and that is on slide 18 there. As I'm saying, this is a ground, so we need to differentiate between addressing the reservations as a reservation, and we need to from addressing content. When the committee reports on reservations, the committee needs to almost have a bird's eye view and say, yes, we agree with this reservation, we will do X. No, we don't agree with that reservation, therefore we're not going to do anything on that. And when the committee looks at international treaty implications, it is our recommendation that the committee will have to say, look, this is not a constitutional ground by itself. Although the treaties will be considered when we look at other constitutional matters, we cannot consider this by itself. On slide 19, I then give the possible actions. So if the committee agrees with our legal view in respect of the treaties, and like I say, it is not a referral on a constitutional ground for Section 79. The reason being that Section 79 is very limited. It's only constitutional matters that may be conferred. We cannot start going into policy. And our rules also say we must limit ourselves to the President's reservations. And those reservations, if we then take it back to Section 79, must be constitutional concerns. So if the committee agrees with this, it may report to the House that the President's reservation is not a legal Section 79 ground, and may thus not be considered by itself. However, the committee will be able to assure the House that wherever the treaty affects constitutional concern raised, the treaties will, of course, be taken into account. If the committee does not agree, then possible action two is there. The committee may say that, no, we do think that this is, in fact, a ground, and we want to consider it as such, and then we will have to just brief the committee on exactly where these treaties are reflected in the bills. Those sections will then be opened up for the committee to consider and make the necessary amendments. Thank you, Chair. That is then my presentation on the last two, the exceptions and the international treaty implications. Thank you.
Secretariat, I think maybe we're looking at how we manage the process moving forward with the issues that have been done in terms of presentation. I think let me invite Secretariat.
Chair, Mrs. Herman's hand is chair, and we'll advise accordingly, Chair.
Honourable Hammonds.
Thank you, Chair. As with the other two reservations, we, having heard the possible responses and the recommendations from the advocate on this, on the next two, the copyright exceptions and the international treaty implications, we also want to apply our minds as the ANC study group to see which of the possible actions we will recommend as the ANC component of the PC. So we also want to take this away and apply our minds further and then consider it when we consider the other two reservations that we discussed earlier. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Chair, okay. Mr. Cuthbert, followed by Mr. Mulder, Chair.
Honourable Cuthbert.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, we're happy to agree to that as well. We'll also go back and study it, and we can adopt it at a meeting scheduled by the Secretariat at a later stage.
Okay. And then let me take Honourable Mulder. Is it Mulder?
Thank you, Chair. Agreed that the Freedom Front Plus will consider this very carefully and thoroughly, and we will address the meeting then when we discuss it further. Thank you.
Okay. Can I just check with the advocate and the secretariat because I think one wanted just to look at the process moving forward, having considered the different options. And I was just thinking that it may be something we may have to look at in a way of having an idea, because obviously on the first two issues we dealt with, it does look like there should be a process we engage in as a committee. I have also corresponded with my colleague at the NCOP, because I think it was this potential of that 75, 76 section. And I did actually inform my colleague that we may be engaging with the NCOP select committee in terms of conclusive process on that issue. So let me just say, we would actually then ask Secretariat and the Advocate just on briefing, so that we can actually have good sense when we go to our next meeting about what time can we put aside and what kind of program as a committee we should be able to endorse to conclude this process. So I think maybe those are the points we may have to look at. If you haven't spoken about it, Secretariat and Advocate, yeah, if I can actually just to comment on those.
Thing here. Chair, just to say that the ACDP would agree also with the opportunity to be afforded to give more attention and study to the presentation. And so I agree with our colleagues that, that's the way we should go. And having said that, Chair, I now need to take my leave to get into the
meeting.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tring. Okay. Okay, Chair? Secretariat and Advocate, if you can just, Andre.
Chair, if I may, Chair, we have scheduled, we preempted the fact that members would want further discussion as parties, Chair. So we have scheduled for next week, although we're having the Black and the ministers briefing the committee, we have scheduled an hour, and we can extend that time, Chair, for Tuesday for further deliberations on this matter, Chair. I think based and also we've also made time available on the Tuesday for on the Wednesday for such deliberations, Chair. If Chair next week the committee may be of the view that they need further time, we may need to re-look at a program and may reschedule the other items on the program for some other time, Chair, and focus purely on concluding deliberations on this matter, Chair. So the option is that we continue the deliberations on Tuesday, and if after that deliberations there is a need for further in-depth discussions, Chair, we may need to look at the item on Wednesday, which is the NLC, and we also included the remitted bills, but maybe the committee may feel that they need all the time to finalize that matter, because it will impact on our process going forward, Chair, in the fourth quarter on how we proceed. So if we do not have a formal decision by next Wednesday, Chair, impacts on our program and how we're dealing with the matter.
Okay. Can we just maybe then agree, honorable members, that we should by next Wednesday have a good sense of how, in terms of the remitted bills, we're going to have a program that will help us process the reservation raised by the president. So I'm just saying the latest we'll actually look at is next Wednesday, and I think the secretariat will be able to actually assist as well. But we would actually, as a meeting today, as parties agree the extra time we need to do to consult and consider on the issues that are before us as presented by the legal team before us, Advocate
Chair,
we almost done, Secretary.
Mr. Cuthbert wants to raise some matter, Chair.
Cuthbert.
Thanks very much, Chairperson. Chair, while we agree in principle that we need time to study the document, we don't want that option to be on the table if you're going to be pushing out the NLC visit. We've called for this visit for a long period of time. And I think we're also limited in time already by virtue of it being only half the meeting. So I wouldn't agree to that, Chairperson, if it was going to push that meeting out any further, and that an alternative arrangement should be then made.
Can I just say, maybe to Cuthbert, we're not talking about the program at this stage. I hear what you're saying, but all the same, we will obviously as a committee compare the list of issues before us and the time we will have as a committee. And I'm sure there will be consensus among parties. Like now, we are agreeing as parties to adjourn and allow the party, through the presentation done by the advocate before us, to consider those issues. And our next meeting, it's 1st of September, Tuesday. And we actually did say we'll put an hour aside. Let's see what we agree upon, Cuthbert, moving forward. I'm sure there will be lots of issues that we'll have to juggle around, because all important issues that are before us, we will have to make time to actually engage on. And it won't be a point that there's anything that we're trying to hide. So can we then agree that next Tuesday, 1st of September, we do actually have the Minister on Black Industrialist? Can we take the first hour just to look at what are issues, what's the way forward in terms of parties' inputs? And secondly, what is the sense of program to deal with the issue of remitted bills? I think those are the kind of issues we'll have to agree upon when we meet next Tuesday. And on the agenda, I think we do actually have the issues we have actually agreed to as the committee. Most of them will be completing before the end of the calendar year, obviously. So can we actually, honorable members, conclude our meeting? And I think if ever there's any further information different members of the portfolio committee may request, I'm sure the latest presentation, Secretariat, can be circulated. I'm just seeing the latest presentation of the legal team, so that parties can be able to consider. If ever there's further issues that parties can be able to actually pick up on before our next Tuesday meeting, I'm sure they can be able to raise those issues with the Secretariat. Andre?
Chair, we will submit any additional information that Ms. Advocate Funimarwa is preparing two members for the to inform the deliberations next Tuesday, Chair. Chair, we also, just on the another matter, we received the response from the department regarding some outstanding written questions. If it's with your permission, Chair, we will then distribute those written responses to the questions of last week's meetings, Chair, raised by members. If you are...
Yeah, no, it can be circulated to members.
Mr. Cuthbert again is his hand, Chair.
Cuthbert.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just regarding the matter that Andre just raised, I just want to understand, did the Competition Commission come back to the committee in written format, or are they going to come and see us physically regarding the SAA matter that I raised with the DG and the Chief Economist last week? Because the chief economist had committed to come back to the committee, you know, with the Competition Commission to, you know, give us, you know, a feedback on the investigation that they've done. And, you know, we would like, as the DA, to at least have some feedback to say, have they started the investigation and where are they? You know, if it's not completed yet, then, you know, understandably so. But we just want some feedback in that respect, and we feel that that should be answered as well.
Can I just say then, those are administrative issues. I'm sure, Secretariat, you can help us follow through.
We'll do that, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Cuthbert. In terms of issues or questions as well, I did actually make a comment in the previous meeting, and I think it may be actually quite important that we actually have a discussion on issues that gets presented to portfolio committee members, so that we do have an understanding. So that we don't actually have individual issues where we actually all of us get to listen and try and understand, but communication then continues with me. Anything that comes to the committee, those questions, response questions, will be circulated to every member of the committee, and then we can pick it up from there. But I'm sure you can speak to the Secretariat on issues to be followed up. If ever there's any need, we can actually then have a discussion. But at this stage, Secretariat is saying there are written responses. So we'll see if ever it covers all issues. And Cuthbert, I'm sure you can pick it up from the Secretariat if ever there are any outstanding issues. Can we then agree that we conclude our meeting? Can we meet next Tuesday, 1st of September? And then I'm sure we'll have actually a sense on how we manage the rest of our program moving forward. Can we then agree our meeting stand adjourned? We meet next Tuesday, 1st September, to pick up where we left off. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Bye.
Bye.